tape code G5. The world's problems today, and we, G5, number 1A.
Well, I would like to talk tonight a bit about the world problems that we face today, and perhaps to try to outline how we could deal with those world problems. I think everybody today is aware that the world is in a bad shape in many ways. Most of the people are afraid that there will be a nuclear war, and therefore that in such a nuclear war, perhaps the whole northern hemisphere and a good part of the southern hemisphere will be just destroyed, either at once or within a few weeks or months. It's a serious problem, especially when the whole world fears evil. Then usually it is so that the fear that I have feared has come upon me. And so we should take that situation really in earnest and think about what could be done, what is our task, what is our responsibility in such a situation. Today, as I said, the fear of a nuclear war is upon us, and this alone is a danger, because it detracts us from quite different problems that may be even more severe than a nuclear war. Naturally, if we can do whatever we can do to prevent a nuclear war, we should do it. That's quite clear. But this is not the central problem of our age, because the problems that the world is meeting is actually that we have a peaceful destruction of the world on the way. A peaceful destruction that comes step by step in such minute steps every day that we hardly are aware of them until then finally we wake up to the problem and see that these problems can no more be handled properly, that they are, so to say, getting out of hand. What are those problems I'm talking about that are uppermost in people's mind today? And problems, 2-3 dozen of problems that are not just small problems, but problems for which individually each problem the world seems to have no solution. I just I'm going to enumerate those problems one by one. They are not new to us. We hear about them on the TV, in the radio. We read about them in the newspapers practically every day. But they have become so numerous that perhaps we have forgotten how numerous they are and what a terrific burden seems to be on our shoulder. I just enumerate quickly those problems for which the specialists have no answer. There is the population explosion that goes on steadily, steadily. Though we are aware of them, even way back, centuries back, Malthus has told us about the population explosion. We become aware of it, but we haven't been able to do anything against it. There is the problem of hunger and starvation. Still, millions and millions of children and grown-ups are starving to death every year. We have the problem of air pollution. We have the problem of water pollution. We have the problem that the food chain is poisoned and is more and more poisoned. We have the problem of the deforestation of the tropics, depleting us of the oxygen which we need, and we know that those tropical forests can no more be planted. There is no more hope that we can plant new trees there because the soil has been taken away in the meantime. There is the problem of the acid rain, especially in the industrialized countries. It's a terrific problem. We see that our forests are getting sick, that already today a great percentage of the forests in the industrial countries are already attacked by it, and it seems that within 50 or 60 years there will be no more forests in those countries. We have the change of climate that we cannot handle. We have a constant depletion of the natural resources and material resources, not only oil, but many of the minerals we deplete. They cannot be recuperated totally, and so we are really depleting our own material resources. There is a extinction more and more of many, many hundreds and thousands of species in the animal and in the plant field. Many of these species die out. Many of the plants die out. More and more of the agricultural land is really giving way to desert, like in Africa, in the Sahel zone, and so on, that the desert grows and the agricultural land goes backward, is depleted. Or you have a great problem of what I think you call the urban sprawl, that more and more people come from the agricultural land and go into the towns. The towns become bigger and bigger and bigger. And with that, we get the urban blight, bigger slums, greater slums, so that finally the slums will be the main part of a city. We have an increase in crime which we don't seem to be able to stop. It increases and increases. We have terrorism that takes over, drug addiction. We have an increase between the gulf of the rich countries and the poor countries. Instead of an equalization of it, we can see that the richer countries remain richer and the poorer countries become poorer and poorer. We can see that today they estimate that already one-third of all the countries are bankrupt, that their growth in national debts is still growing and growing, and one doesn't really see that there will be ever a possibility that this trend will be broken or turned backward. We have the great problem of unemployment, and naturally with the computerization of everything, that problem is even more difficult to handle in the future. We have a false educational system, especially an erosion of the standard of education in the West, in the industrialized countries, a false education of the youth. We have school problems, vandalism. We have the increase at home, increase in divorce, disintegration of the family unit. We have a cultural decay all over the Western world. We have an armament race. We're at the point where everyone can be killed 15 times. Must be very nice to be killed 15 times within a day or two. We have corruption. Corruption not only in government, but in private industry. Energy crisis, that gives a lot to be thought about. The whole world economy seems to get out of control. And naturally, the first thing I have mentioned, the danger of a nuclear war. So this is quite an impressive list. And if one is investigating what people who should know something about these problems are saying, naturally one always finds here and there somebody who says, well, we will be able to control that, we will put that straight. But the majority of those who should know something about this problem just don't think that there is a way out. They can't really see a solution to it. Now, if we ask now, could we find somewhere and somehow a common denominator for all these many unsolved and unsolvable problems, then we can perhaps reduce everything to a few factors. So I'm talking about the characteristics of the present crisis. As far as I just can see it and have put them together. The very first point that I think we have to see is this, that this crisis is a total crisis. It has a total character. This is very new. If one talks to people who don't like to think very far and says, look here, the situation the world is in today is really severe, then they answer, well, that's not so bad, don't worry too much. Mankind has always gone through a lot of crises, through wars and through epidemics, through plagues, and mankind always recovered and things just went on just the same and went on very happily, and there was always further development and unfoldment. So don't worry. Yes, that is true, that in the past, really, all those wars could happen, no matter how big the war was, all those plagues could come over a country or even over a continent, and actually, after a few years, all this was ironed out and everything went on as before. Back to business. But we must see that this crisis in which we are in today is of a different nature. The world has changed in the meantime, and so we must see that the whole of mankind is in danger. We can no more think, yes, there can be a war, and then after 5 years there will be the reconstruction of the country and of the industry and of the production line, etc., and everything goes on very nicely. Well, even if we think back to the last war that has approximately taken away 50 million people killed in those 5 years, well, statistically, not psychologically, statistically that was a minor thing. Because today, within 50 years, we have an increase in population of 350 million. That is, therefore, about 7 times more than what has been killed through the war, through the last World War. You can see what I mean by it statistically, that even a world war, as we had witnessed, cannot really shake the earth, cannot really shake mankind. Even 50 million today are produced in excess to the present population within 8 months. So it only takes today 8 months to make up for those 50 million people that were killed in the last war. So that cannot shake mankind nor our earth. It's hard to say, but we talk now about problems, about world problems, and not about the individual history or the individual, how the individual had react on this. But today this is different. Today we have only one world, and therefore everything today which happens in one place of the world affects the whole world. We are no more living in separate countries or separate continents as in former times. If hundreds of years ago something happened that was a terrific catastrophe in China, we would not even know it. But today, if something changes in one point of the earth, be it in the fiscal, say in the finance world, be it in the economic world, be it in the political world, be it in the military world, or whatever world there is, it always affects everybody. We are one world, and therefore everybody is now in the same boat. So we have therefore this one point that all these problems that I have enumerated are worldwide problems, and therefore not one of the problems can eliminate it and treat it separately as an isolated problem and say that problem we will fix. The population explosion is combined with hunger, is combined with finance, is combined with economy, is combined with war and making wars and so on. Everything is, so to say, woven into one web. And so we must always see the universal nature of the problem. And so with this, I already want to show that the second factor we have to consider is that no one of all these problems can be isolated and solved in isolation. Everything affects the other thing. We have seen that and have become aware of it, say, for instance, through ecology. Everybody today talks about the ecology, and everybody today knows that what happens at one place or what is done in one factory has an influence on the surrounding and on the health of the population and on politics and on finance and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I remember only, how long was that, 15 years ago, that we had a conference in Asilomar and somebody was talking about ecology and nobody of us who were sitting there knew the term. And within 50 years, every child knows what ecology is and is aware of the problem and is aware that the problem is a problem that concerns not only everybody, but concerns also the agricultural field, also the animal field, that concerns everything on this earth. A third factor, which I think we have to keep in mind, is that the solution of this crisis cannot be postponed. In earlier times, when there was a crisis, you always could postpone it. You just have to live long enough, and then somehow, it was solved. And in this way, great empires really, on the way down the road, could survive very often hundreds of years until the final shock came. They could postpone the solution. Today, it shows that the solution can no more be postponed. Most people say it's 5 to 12. Others say it's 12 o'clock. And others say it's 12:05. And I have heard that Bucky Fuller has written a new book just lately, and he has given us 50 months when he wrote the book, that would be another 3 or 4 years to solve the problem if it can still be solved. So this is the attitude one hears from every angle, that the problem must be solved right now, because if it's not solved now, there is no more a later on. This is absolutely new. Another point that comes up is really this, that people become to be aware that the crisis in which we are in is not due to an exterior factor. It's not due to God or nature, that it is not something that has come upon mankind by a suprahuman power like God or by a natural power, that nature did not play the way we would like it, that there were famines or things like that, or earthquake or whatever it is. The crisis is man-made. And this is also a point that is usually new, that people begin to realize that man is responsible, that mankind is responsible for the crisis in which we are today. that we can't blame something or somebody else. There is no scapegoat for the problem. We made it. It's man-made. And the last point I want to bring out is this, that through this insight into the whole problematics of today, people begin to realize that because it is man-made, that the problem really is that man does not know what man is. That nobody knows really what man is. If I look back over the last 9 months or so and think about various incidents, various talks on TV that I witnessed where people who should know something about the subject were discussing their subject, that I could see that they finally always came to the point that the problem lies with men. I remember how military people who should know about the whole armament, the West and the East, that they would discuss and discuss and find no answer, find no agreement, until finally they said, well, after all, it's a matter of consciousness. Without a change of consciousness, there is no solution. I remember to listen to people from the economic field discussing the situation, finally coming to the solution, saying, well, we can do it this way or that way, both ways will not do it, because man must first change his attitude. There must be a change of consciousness. I was watching political people, top people, discussing the situation of today and coming to the conclusion there's actually no way out if people don't change their consciousness. Always comes right back from whatever field I would see, the moment there were people with high standard and with a big horizon of thinking, that they would always come back and say, well, man must change his consciousness, or else there is no way out. But is that the solution? To say, well, man must change his consciousness because they didn't know how to change it. They didn't know into what to change it. That is still left open. That's still a question mark. Should we change it the way the psychologist asks us, or the psychiatrist, and which line, or the way the church people ask us to change, and which church, and which denomination? You see, we would just come from the rain into the storm, would just get worse and worse. So the point then that comes out of this discussion is that actually man does not know what the form of his consciousness should be, and why does man not know what consciousness he should have? Well, man is not the creator, he is the created, therefore, because man does not know God. So everything is brought back to the question that mankind should know the one and only God. Without this, they see that the chaos is inevitable. Well, that brings us naturally to the pith of mankind's whole concern since Homo sapiens, namely always the question, what is God? If we know what is God, if we have a right answer to that, we have a right consciousness, and therefore the right consciousness of man, and with the right consciousness of man, then things can be changed in the world. Listening to these people, I became aware that they are still far behind our times. Because the moment they were saying, well, men must have another consciousness, and therefore they must have another concept of God, that they would always fall back to the second record of creation. Their God is still Jehovah, a national deity, a deity that has created a material man, and so still there is the concept that man is material, corporeal, but he should be a bit different, he should have a different consciousness, and so is still going into the line of the second record of creation, of which we know that already the first son of Adam went out of the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod, in chaos, in illusionment. And this is really what we have been witnessing over the last many thousand years, that mankind had a wrong concept of God because it believed more in the second record of creation, in the Jehovistic concept, and therefore in the Adamistic concept of man, whereas the Bible would give us the answer that the true creator and the true creation is depicted in the first record of creation with a God that is Elohim, a spiritual God, and therefore also with a creation that is spiritual, with spiritual man. So it seems that today the world can't get around anymore to face the question, is God really Jehovah or is it Elohim? Is man really Adam or is man the image and likeness of God? This is, so to say, the conclusion or the crux of the whole problem. So can you see that what we are doing in our classes is really going really to the core of the whole problem of mankind, that we say we should be engaged really in that one big problem, what is God, what is that divine being, and therefore give that answer through the three categories of being with the symbolized through the capitalized terms. If we therefore devote ourselves to that new concept of God, which is not just one name, like the divine being, or the creator, or the one, or the infinite, but to its inner structure of that one being, that then we can see that if we devote ourselves to the definition of God, that definition of God is entertained in our understanding, and therefore little by little the structure of the infinite one, of the one being, is in consonance with the structure of our understanding. We have that isomorphy between the structure of being itself and the structure of understanding. But the problem is also this, that we say, yes, that has naturally been a line of research that has gone on in the Judean Christian religion over thousands of years. And though over thousands of years really the world has progressed and has evolved in spite of many catastrophes, wars and epidemics and so on, can't that be again that even today, with what we know of the Bible and of Christian Science have known, cannot that be a solution? And there I would like to make a point of what I feel is of greatest import. Namely, that the method of yesterday, no matter if it was the method of the Bible or if it was the method of Christian Science of yesterday, any method of yesterday does not solve adequately the problems of today. Therefore, we must see that we go along with the development of consciousness and see that we cannot now try to solve the world problem on the understanding that one had over the last 100 years. It needs a completely different standpoint to handle such a situation. Because we have seen what? We have seen that the problem of today are no more isolated individual problems, which can be handled individually and in an isolated way. Just as our problems of today are individual problems, one day it's this problem, one day it's the other problem, and in one way or the other, with the concept of the last century, we could handle these problems. This is no more possible when we see that the problem of today is a total crisis, that everything is woven into one consistent whole, even in the negative, so that we need the adequate structure of consciousness to attack it and to handle it. What is that paradigm shift from yesterday to today? What is the mutation that is necessary, that must come upon us from how to handle the problem of yesterday and the problem of today? We have seen that we can somehow symbolize that through that transition from the 6,000-year period to the 7,000-year period. In the 6,000-year period we have seen, we have the discovery of Christian Science, and have seen that that the system and structure of Christian Science can be seen and understood through the ideas that are expressed through the three categories of being. That we can handle individual problems individually through individual ideas of the capitalized terms. That was our practice for individual problems. But today we have a collective problem, or even a universal problem. No more thousands of individual problems. We have the one and the whole. And therefore, I see that we can only handle a problem that is a universal or collective problem also through a consciousness that is whole and not individualized. Therefore, we have seen that the transition from the 6,000 to the 7,000 year period can be defined like this, that in the 6,000 year period, we were working out from the synonymous terms through the ideas of the synonymous terms. The 7,000 year period is taking in the whole and goes out from the whole and never leaves the whole. Therefore, the consciousness that has to deal and treat the present situation is from the point of view of the capitalized term themselves, and no more just through the ideas. Because now we can see that the whole problem must be dealt with from the whole of the truth. So the problem is holistic, therefore the consciousness which has to deal with it must also be holistic. You can ask something else and can say, why does such a crisis come about? Why are we suddenly faced with such a crisis? It has just come upon us as a thief by night, so to say. And suddenly he stood before us and said, here I am with the gun in hand. And we are surprised because we were not really awake to what's going on day by day, always in little steps. So why has this crisis come about? Well, a crisis is always a transitionary stage in a paradigm shift. Whenever a paradigm shift comes upon the individual or upon a collective or upon a universal problem, every paradigm shift demands that we leave the old behind and cling to the new. That the method of yesterday must be dropped and the method of today must be gained. But this paradigm shift is never something that happens in a second, just from one moment to the next. We know that it takes a long time for the spiritual to mutate, and especially for people's consciousness to mutate. It takes centuries usually. But in that transitional stage of mutation, and we are in that mutation phase from the 6,000-year period to the 7,000-year period, where it is demanded of man that he changes his attitude, he changes his standpoint, that he changes his consciousness. We cannot ask that this change is done at once. We cling to the old, because in the old we are secure. We know the old, we seem to be a master of the old. The new is not yet definite, we don't quite trust it, we are not quite safe and feel safe in it. And therefore we vacillate constantly between the old and the new, and go through the same period as the Israelites went through when they were going through the desert. From time to time they were calling out and saying, let's go back to Egypt. And there we had meat, there we had to eat. Here in the desert we may starve of hunger. So there were always that vacillating to and fro. And this is typical for everybody, but it's naturally also even more so for a whole community, even more so for the whole of mankind. We cannot expect that the whole of mankind changes his consciousness from an old concept into a new concept. And that period, that transitional period, is therefore a friction between the old and the new, and that friction and friction and frictioning is a crisis, is a chemicalization that takes place between them. So there is a time of instability, of incertitude, of fear. We don't know quite, are we going to make it? How can we make it? How can we get hold of the new? And this, therefore, is the crisis. And there, again, I can come back to one of the factors I mentioned, that I said, well, one sees that this crisis of today is man-made. It's not made by nature, by a catastrophe in nature. It's man-made. Is this crisis really man-made, I ask? And there I think we have to be very careful to see that it's actually not even man-made, because man is not the maker. He is the reflection of something. So therefore that crisis which we are going through is not man-made. Who made it then? It's God-made. It's God-made, not in the way that God sends us a nuclear war, but it's God-made insofar that it lies in the God Genesis, that the idea has always pushed forward and pushed forward. Right from the first 1,000-year period, it has pushed forward to the second, and Israel went through a crisis. And the second-year period pushed forward and pushed forward because it wanted to come into the 3,000-year. And Israel went through the crisis, through the floods and through Babel. And so every 1,000-year period, by pushing forward, because behind it is God's plan of salvation. And that plan of salvation is the impact that really precipitates itself on mankind and asks mankind to change, to transform, to mutate, to make a paradigm shift. And mankind resists it. But it's not really man-made. It's God-made. It's the Christ idea that says, I'm not allowing that mankind goes on the way it has gone on up to now. I want to change it. I want to bring really mankind to a higher aim, to a further goal. Dayadashada would say, God says, I won't bring mankind to the point of Omega, to the end, to the fulfillment. And so we can see that we are at the threshold from the 6 to the 7,000 year period, and something is pushing. It's not the politicians that are pushing. It's not the finance people that are pushing. It's not the economy that is pushing. It's not the military people that is pushing. It's God that is pushing. God has an idea. It has a Christ. It has a Christ of salvation. It wants us that we change, and we resist it. What is that change? We have defined it, what that change is. It is that change from the 6,000-year period consciousness to the 7,000-year period of consciousness. So we begin to see that we must see that whatever happened in this world cannot happen out of a power next to God, because there is only one God. Either we accept that there is only one God, and then we must also accept that the present crisis is something that is in the line of the plan of God. Or else we must accept that there are many gods and many powers. Well, then we better give up. Also, we can see that we live in a very special period. In so far, for the first time, we see that even the physicist or the materialist begin to accept that there is no matter. Now, up to this point, we always had idealists, we always had religious people, spiritually minded people who would say all that there is a spiritual universe and a spiritual God, but that was just a little section of religiously, spiritually minded people. But the world was run on the basis of matter.